This week on Redwood Wonk, we discuss the government shutdown, Trump's tour in Asia and the military tour, next week's elections, and more. Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Wonk. My name is Eric Kirk.
I'm Matthew Owen.
And I'm Dave Frank.
And we're discussing national news of the day, and we're going to start with the shutdown. Is there going to be an end to it? Consequences, it's about to get real. SNAP benefits for 40 million people are about to be canceled, and airports are in chaos. And there are some other interesting developments. National Federal Government Workers Union is actually putting pressure on Democrats to put an end to this. But they've got medical coverage. There's a lot to discuss here. Dave, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So I think big picture, what we've talked about in the recent past and kind of what is just bubbling to the surface right now is that both parties seem to believe that they are coming out ahead in this shutdown, despite the fact that there are, you know, tens of millions of affected people, which includes programs like SNAP, food stamps, women, infant, children. And so it's really the poorest folks in America that are hurt the most by these spending cuts. But because what we're talking about here today is really the shutdown itself, we're talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of government workers. And there's are beginning to be ripple effects across the economy, and there's areas where these people are concentrated. It's the largest single employer in the country, so therefore it's affecting every state. Virginia the worst, California second worst. And so there's going to be a tremendous amount of pushback, which we've started to see already. The union, the federal employees unions are already starting to say, look, this is very costly. We need to do something different. So I'll just end it with this little kind of observation that as I started with, both parties seem to think that the other party's taking the brunt of the blame, but that will really ratchet up beginning when the November 1st rolls around, and we really start to see people hit in the pocketbook directly.
And I'm going to go off with November 1st is the normal paycheck day for federal employees. They're going to go to their bank account and look it up and says no deposit, and they're going to freak out. SNAP benefits affect 42 million. That's a supplemental nutrition assistance program. It's basically a little plastic card they swipe there to get their groceries. It's coming to an end this Saturday. So people are going to go to the grocery stores, purchase all these groceries, swipe the card, and it's going to say, no money. Sorry. When you talk about someone's food for their family, they're going to freak out. Atlanta Airport just announced they've had 7-hour waits at TSA. Seven. I've been the bad ones before, it's 45 minutes and everyone's freaking out. If I was in a 7-hour wait, I would lose my mind because people are going to miss flights. Bad things are going to happen. And I've been saying all along, this shutdown is going to end with TSA and air traffic controllers just starting to call out sick saying, you don't pay me, I don't work. That's how it works.
I agree. And in terms of the food, people are saying, well, there's food banks. SNAP provides about 10 times as much food as all of the food banks combined. The food banks cannot make up for 40 million people who need
the record, Eric. In Humboldt County, there's 15,000 families that use the food banks. We're a relatively small county of 135,000 people. 15,000 families is probably close to 40,000 people. That's a lot.
It is. And that's about a third of our county. I mean,
they go across the country, and especially in the poor red rural areas. We said this earlier, is that I've been agreeing with Marjorie Taylor Greene, and my brain's about to explode on that. But she's starting to talk sensibly, not a crazy Marjorie Taylor Greene. But her constituents are letting her know what's happening. And she keeps going back to the Republicans going, how do they buy food for their family? And 40% of her constituents are on Medicaid, and they've just figured out January 2027, they're getting massive cuts. And she says, how do these people get medical care? And most importantly, November 1 is going to be the open enrollment for healthcare. People are going to go online and find out, last year I was paying $420 a month. This year they want to double it or worse, especially if your company usually picks up half to two-thirds of what you pay. If you're self-employed, that number is going to go up radically, which Marjorie Taylor Greene's son is, and he's freaking out saying, Mom, what the hell? I can't afford $20,000 a year for medical coverage.
And go ahead. I'll just add, that, I mean, I've seen sort of anecdotally, there are people whose premiums on the exchange have tripled. There are people who their family premiums have doubled, but it just depends on your income. So the closer you are to that 30,000 mark versus, which is the low end, versus the closer you are to the high end, which I think used to be about $70,000 or $80,000. I'm not sure of the cap on the exchange these days, but if you're closer to that top end for your household income, which is typically, you know, I think a family of three is the average family in America. You know, they base it on, like, say, a family of four. I think you need to, the poverty level is about 40,000 for that household, which is higher than it used to be. So it really, it just depends. But the reason I mentioned that is because the what used to be called the National Opinion Research Center is now called NORC, Center for Public Affairs Research. They pointed out that in the past, because this isn't our first government shutdown, in the past, around 65% of people, households, sorry, respondents, have said, hey, I don't like what's happening. I don't think the government should be shut down. But they're saying it's a little bit different now because maybe people are a little bit numb to it. But now that number, for the most recent data from this week, was that only about half of respondents are saying that this is something that's even on their radar, that they're in part because I was like, give me some meat on this bone. Like, where is this coming from? They said only about 20% of people think that it affects themselves. But we're going to find out, like you had said, Matthew, that in our community, that could be more like a third of the community just alone on food benefits. And that's a much bigger number. So it makes sense that there are going to be a lot more people impacted this time than last time and last few times. But one last thing here, Eric, sorry to keep going.
No worries. Go ahead.
So what I think is pretty interesting, too, is that, there's this practice, this former practice that when things like this happen, there's a funding mechanism in place for food stamps. So like they have this like reserve pool of money that even when the government shuts down, they can wait a while because it's often the case that they resolve it by December. There's a lot of machinations that happen between the end of the fiscal year and the 3 months of the calendar year. This is inside baseball stuff. But bottom line is that this administration, there's been a meme out there that the cruelty is the goal. Instead of tapping into that, what the governments have done in the past, they're saying, no, we're just going to pick and choose and we're going to fund the things we want to fund and not fund the things we're not interested in funding. So there's a degree of targeted cruelty here that might make its way into the mainstream discourse that they could have had it be a different outcome.
And the problem for the Republicans is that a lot of those people are in red states and quite a few of them are popping up onto YouTube that are MAGA people and otherwise Republican supporters. And so they do have to deal with this. And the point is there are actually some discussions going on, but you wouldn't know it from, the public. There's no story about them meeting. Trump is across the Pacific Ocean doing what we'll discuss later. And they're building a ballroom, which, whether or not you agree with it, it's just not a good image right now in terms of priorities. Who's going to take the brunt of it? I don't know. Maybe incumbents in general at a certain point. But, we'll see because we have an election next week. Will it have any effect on that? I don't know. But it is going to start affecting just about everybody at a certain point, directly or indirectly.
And there's an old saying, all politics are local. And people don't care about politics until it affects moi. When it affects you, your pocketbook, the food in your refrigerator, people start paying attention really quickly. And that's going to start this Saturday.
Yeah, no. But it's indirect, too. That means stores aren't getting, selling the stuff and food. And, as people are going hungry, it means that all of the charitable resources are going to be strapped, and Newsom is talking about bringing the National Guard in. That's great. That helps distribute food, but you still got to get the food.
Right?
Right.
Let's not forget which political party controls the White House, which political party controls Congress, which political party controls the Senate. It's their shutdown. They own it.
Yeah. Well, they're talking about doing the nuclear option, which quite frankly would actually, there'd be silver linings because I don't like the way the filibuster works now anyway. And if the Republicans do it here, Democrats will do it the next time on issues that they choose. So the Republicans have to make sure that they're never going to lose the Senate again if they do this. And maybe they got a plan for that. I don't know.
So I think it's worth mentioning now, this is a good enough place as any in our conversation. So Matthew, you brought it to my attention. I typically do watch Bill Maher, but I'm a little bit behind. So this week, Republican Governor Andy Beshear was on there and he made a really great point. So, you know, whatever people think about Bill Maher's show, I mean, he's a comedian and politics is his theme. So you get all kinds of shows. I actually very much enjoy his show and always have. Other people say he's got an agenda. I don't think he has an agenda. I just think he likes to throw the zingers around, bring in the people that are going to throw the zingers around. I find it quite entertaining.
And likes to be iconoclastic sometimes.
Yeah. But so Governor Andy Beshear, I have some quotes from him. He said that this shutdown will profoundly affect America. This budget will profoundly affect America. He talks about rural hospitals being the largest employers in most rural communities. He says that cutting funds will impact their ability to stay open, and it will impact all the small businesses that benefit from the economic activity around a hospital. So the big takeaway is that you can't remove $1 trillion from communities and not expect an impact. And more than that, it's actually affecting the well-being of the workforce. And this was something I hadn't even thought of before, but people can miss maybe a little bit of time to go seek out medical services. But if their hospital shuts down or their clinic shuts down, and they have to drive 2 to 3 hours to the nearest medical services, they're less likely to get the care that they need. And that's their children, and that's their parents, and that's, you know, their extended families. And so what he's saying is we really do need to maintain, from his perspective, funding for Medicaid. It shouldn't be that we use complicated paperwork as a filter to who does and doesn't get needed, you know, critical care. And so this is the quote. He says, "This is the worst piece of legislation in my lifetime for what it's going to do in my state and for what it's going to do to rural America," end quote. Which, as you said, Eric, that's Republican territory.
Big chunk of America's rural.
Most.
Go ahead.
Oh, the other thing I want to mention, you talked about this, Dave, is the trickle-down effect. When hospitals close, that means all these doctors, nurses, and all the people who work there don't have jobs anymore. They spend money in a local community, whether it's a grocery store, going out to eat, a bar, a concert, whatever. And if suddenly I don't have income, I'm cutting back to, I got to pay rent, I got to buy food, and I got to pay utilities. And outside of that, that's a lot of stuff is discretionary. I'm just going to cut.
I'd say the silver lining in all this is it may reduce inflation. It's, and offset the inflationary causes such as the tariffs and other issues, because if people don't have money to spend, prices drop. It's just that is how it works. But the consequences, that, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't have money to buy anything, you don't necessarily benefit from the price drops. Maybe you can do something. But this is going to impact farmers that are already being hurt, because if people can't buy their food, if the food banks, you know, will do it, but they're limited with their money. The SNAP, farmers depend on SNAP. I mean, you know, that's produce. You can go to farmers markets and you can buy produce. There's a lot of things you can't buy with SNAP, but produce is one of those things that benefits. And no, we're in a jam here, but if the Democrats cave, then millions of people are going to lose health care real soon. And as I said, the president is not even participating.
He doesn't care.
Doing anything.
He just goes on Fox News and says it's the Democrats' fault, and everyone believes him no matter what he says.
Yeah, well, and that's, but we'll see what happens, because yeah, it is about to get real. And I believe that as of the November 15th, unless somebody else donates, you know, $1 billion or something, the military is not going to get paid.
So we talked about that $130 million that somebody donated. I think we talked about it together to help pay for military wages ultimately. But I saw a breakdown of that. If you give $130 million to help pay military staff members, that's $100 per person. So it's the tiniest fraction of assistance, which like you said, Eric, that just means we're talking billions of dollars would really be needed to make any kind of dent in not getting paid.
Yeah, well. You know, it'll be real. I mean, you know, they have so far tried to keep parks alive. open, you know, like the national parks and things, because so tourists don't get angry, and, you know, a few other things that are Trump's favorites. But this is, we are at the point, that we're not setting a record. There have been shutdowns that have been longer than this, but we're getting to a point where it's going to make a big difference, and there's going to be pressure on somebody. I don't know how many times the Democrats have defeated the bills, but I don't know how many more times they can keep doing that. I don't know if any Democrats are starting to move away. I mean, they already lost Fetterman and I forget who the other independent, there's an independent guy, two of them, but I think like five more would have to break off before they could break a filibuster. So they're kind of holding tight, and they're assuming that it's going to work out in their favor. They're playing a game of chicken with millions of lives. If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
All right, let's talk about Trump goes to Japan. Lot to talk about on that. Yeah. Of course, Japan just elected a very Trumpian woman to prime minister, who is also on a platform to remove immigrants, but she's not just targeting illegal immigrants. There aren't actually that many in Japan, but she is going after people who basically are not nationals there. And if you mess up in any way with your visa, you're out. Usually the targets are South Koreans. There is a lot of bad blood between Japan and South Korea because of a lot of intense history.
Rape and murder.
I mean, it's...
Don't forget China.
Right. Well, and anyway, so what do we want to say about the trip? We want to start with Japan?
Well, I want to point out first on the close-up photos, President Kankles is not looking good. His hands are just becoming almost... What's the thing that he had and Ben-Hur? They had the people in the caves where they had a skin disease. They were leopards. He almost looks like he has a leopard hand there. It's like, it's just discolored and gross. You can't see his ankles because his ankles look like thighs now. They're just elephant size. And what was worse than when he did the Japan thing, he was walking around like an old man, confused where he was. Yeah. He recently had an MRI
like Biden at Walter Reed Hospital.
It's he had an MRI this week at Walter Reed Hospital, but he's not telling us what it's for. And of course, the media is going, this guy's not looking good. Did he have another stroke? Because his thing there, he looked like a confused grandpa who didn't even know what your house looked like anymore.
No, and she had to actually go and bring him back to the right spot. And I guess people are, I didn't see it, but people are noting that her handshake was stronger than his. I don't really care, but that is a big deal to some people.
And had Joe Biden done that, Fox News would have gone on a rampage that grandpa's looking old and confused. Let's get him out of the house.
Right. And sooner or later, there are a few aggressive reporters left in the media. They're going to start asking, you know, people like Pam Bondi and Vance, so are you hiding his medical condition? I mean, you know, this is where, man, he is the oldest president we've ever had. And I mean, I watched that video of him wandering around, and it's a little scary, actually. You know, funny.
Yeah, I mean, so the Daily Show, one of the little bits that they did about it, they said that he was dog walked around the ceremony.
And, well, yeah, they did the dog show.
Yeah,
Russians for dog show.
Yeah. So,
but at least Trump made the two steps up on the stage.
Yeah, yeah. So it was comical, but at the same time, there was a what I would describe as a an embarrassing detachment. He didn't really seem of the place. And you could see from the facial expressions on Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi's face. Well,
she was horrified.
Yeah, yeah. And she's actually, she's a former journalist. She used to work as a senatorial staffer here in the United States. So she's accustomed. She was ready for it. It's not like this was, she's well aware. And she was still, surprised at this lack of vigor and focus that he had. So that says a lot. But to be fair, a lot of people observe that about former President Biden, too.
And then he mentioned how great a friend Japan has been since the explosive war. I mean,
and we've risen from the ashes, and her eyes bulged out on that, going, "You dropped two nukes on us.
Yeah.
I mean, you vaporized two of our cities."
Yeah.
What's wild, though? Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, what's wild is that, you know, like let's take a 30,000-foot view for a second. This was a really important diplomatic tour. He went to the ASEAN summit in Malaysia. He went to the APAC summit in South Korea, where he's going to meet with President Xi Jinping on the sidelines. So this is a distraction, maybe, from where the American, where U.S. interests met, where they improved. And I would say there were some positive things happening for whatever the impetus was. So, for example, he signed a critical minerals pact with Malaysia. He announced new trade deals with Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia.
Yes.
So there were a lot of positive things that happened behind the scene from the perspective of the administration and arguably from our country. Also, there, you know, he received those personal gifts, right? So the Washington Post reported
the golden golf ball.
Yeah, exactly. And she just played to, you know, the Japanese contingent played to the ego.
Right.
And so they,
you're smart.
They floated the idea of maybe purchasing a fleet of Ford F-150 trucks. They floated maybe giving him a nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize. And they actually brought him to the Emperor Naruhito's Imperial Palace, which I'm sure he loved, where he was promised an increased militarization of the Japanese budget priorities and up to $550 billion in foreign direct investment in the U.S. So we did get some, as a country, we did get some positives out of it. But if you guys don't mind, I'll hand it over to you to talk about the other aspect of this Japan trip, which is on board the USS George Washington at the Yokosuka Naval Base.
Well, I don't want to keep harping on it, but there do need to be some serious questions about his mental health, because in front of the military, I think that's where it happened, he went on this weird tangent about magnets and how water cancels magnets, and then says, what do you prefer, hydroponics or magnets? And people are cheering for hydroponics. And then he says, what's the matter with you? I mean, it is a serious question. I'm glad his people accomplished these other things, but this is the leader. This is the guy with the button that, you know, you can send it off, who is going off on tangents. It's not the first time. I mean, during the campaign, we all remember when he was talking about whether it's better to be eaten by sharks or electrocuted in the water, right? I mean, it is not the first time he's done this, but it does seem to be happening more frequently. And it may be that the pressure of the job is getting to him, you know, and complicating his other health matters.
His mental acumen is in serious decline. Well, it's just the country needs to agree with
that. It certainly looks that way, you know. And with all of this push about, who hid Joe Biden's, illness, well, those same questions are going to go to the people around Trump now. I mean, it's got to be. I mean, that video was worse than Biden going and staring off in space on the stage.
Right.
It was worse than that.
And the other thing, too, he's telling the military, I'm your commander in chief. You have to do what I tell you, whether it's a legal order or an illegal order.
I missed that.
He's putting troops on the streets in major American cities. What they're doing there, I don't know. Los Angeles is joking. It's sunshine. People are buying tacos. They're out hanging out at parks. Oh, yeah, there's the National Guard there. What are they doing? Nothing. What are the Marines doing here? Nothing.
Nothing. Marines have done nothing. They're bored.
That's my point. What are they doing?
Well, they're there because there's an invasion and an insurrection there. The city's in flames.
You must be watching Fox News again. My God.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a way to frame it, is there's this, it's a tale of two cities. You know, there is this narrative that has taken on a characterization that we are under invasion, that there are millions of people in the streets that are a threat to the stability and well-being of our country. And that seems to be, that unlocks these emergency powers, this fentanyl importation that is really not related in any way to, say, Venezuela or to, you know, the No Kings protest or the anti-ICE protest. It's really, it's just a narrative. It's aligning ICE interests and Customs and Border Patrol interests and right leaning interests. But I want to point pivot to you know what my observations about what he said in front of the military. You guys alluded to it, but I just want to make it explicit. When he came out, it was like just another rally for him. Politico calls it his signature rally style. He had a peace through strength banner, and he was doing this weave. I listened to a lot of it, to be honest. And yeah, his famous weave. So you could tell he's reading from the teleprompter sometimes where he's saying thoughtful.
And then
he does this free form, spontaneous banter with the crowd where he's like doing shout outs to the different operational groups and, you know, and he's getting them to do this callback thing a little bit. And like you said, the power source for the catapults on the aircraft carrier, should it be like it is from the movies and post-World War II era where it was steam? Or do we take this nuclear power plant inside the aircraft carrier, do these new electromagnetic launching, which is really what they're doing? And he's saying, I like it better what I saw in the movies. I don't like what you guys are doing in the future. And it's kind of whatever. It's inane. But really, this is what I was going to say.
Saturday Night Live outdo that?
Oh, right. They're going to have a field day this Saturday.
Yeah, but what are they going to do? How can they make it sound more ridiculous than real life?
He's going to walk out on the stage and just kind of stare, and someone's going to guide him along. He's going to walk over there and stare, and then he'll go off on the tangents, and he's got to stop doing the double jerk off when he dances to YMCA. Oh, it's just, yeah. Oh my God, in front of the military, why are you doing a double jerk off in front of the military?
You would think somebody would tell him, right?
That YMCA, you know, the village people. I mean, it is very
gay. Yeah. Just for the record, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. It should have been playing in the Navy, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
Yeah, let me just say this one last thing. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
But the most important thing, I think, the most uncomfortable and sort of historically relevant element here is that he really is trying to politicize the military by saying, I send the National Guard in because of the crime and immigration crisis that we have. But hey, if the National Guard isn't enough, you know we're going to send you guys, your active troops, because we're going to do this.
The Navy into the cities, okay.
Right.
It's all about November 2026. If he loses the midterms and the Democrats can't control Congress, his office tour is over. For the next 2 years, he's a lame duck president. That's it.
I mean,
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Bring Congress back and they'll do their job.
Yeah. So we'll talk about this topic more in the future, but there has been a new national security directive that says that if you are un-American, anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-family, you've engaged in any of these activities that are listed as indica, which means indicators of like pre-crime, hat tip to Minority Report. That people who are dissenting the establishment and the status quo of this administration are in queue for, they're being considered likely future sort of criminals. And they use the T word. They're saying, oh, you guys are, you know, if you're Antifa, you're terrorists, you're this, that, the other thing. What that does, though, is just having the National Security Directive alone is not scary to people. But what that does is it unlocks pre-existing relationships between local governments, state governments, and federal governments in the terrorism fusion centers. So they already have all the pieces in place and they've already activated it. So the question is, how is this going to play out? And I think that there's like kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. We've got some judges in the mix who are actually, we could talk more about that, but some judges are trying to do their best to kind of keep things, the due process in place. But that's not enough for this administration. They announced today that they're going to, or it's leaked out today. I'm not sure if it's an official announcement or a leak, but up to a dozen, this is Fox News reported too, up to a dozen of the ICE leaders around the country are going to be replaced.
Yes.
Because they're not effective
because
enough.
Because they're not doing enough deportation.
They're missing quotas.
You know, Border Patrol, who've been a little bit more crazy even than ICE, into it, Border Patrol people. And yes, he wants more arrests and deportations. He's not taking into account the fact that the deportation process is slowing down because it's being jammed with people who actually have defenses now. You know, the reason that Obama and even Biden were able to get so many people deported is they focused on the low-hanging fruit, the people who actually have criminal records, who don't have the defenses to do it. But when you just grab people out of Home Depot, you've got people who are saying, hey, I've been in compliance with everything. I haven't broke the law. You can't prove that how I got into the country. You know, it's just, and they're talking about more than half of the deportations that are even being ordered in court are cases that are over a year old. So it's just, he's not even getting that done. And yes, now he wants to get rid of anybody who's not hardline.
And I just want to ask David, Eric, do you guys speak Cuban? Because I'll be seeing you guys in Guantanamo Bay next year.
Oh, no.
Yep.
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, you mentioned Cuba, but there's actually, you know, part of the reason these judges are so, up in arms, so to speak, is because they're saying that, we're putting in orders that you can't use tear gas and riot control measures against journalists and peaceful protesters who are not an immediate threat. So, for example, kids in Halloween costumes were tear gassed because the agents said, our safety wasn't guaranteed. We needed to guarantee our safety when we approach these people. So they're attacking journalists.
People with gas are scary?
Yeah. Go figure. The irony. One example, Judge Sarah Ellis said, you have to come in, speaking to Commander Greg Bovino, that you have to come in because you're not following our orders and we can't be sure that what you're doing is consistent with law. I need you to check in with me every day. And that's already today, as we sort of start this conversation, there's been an appeals court that already suspended that order because they deferred to the Department of Justice, who said this order was extraordinarily disruptive to our protocols. And the appeals court agreed, yeah, you know what? We wouldn't want to disrupt what you've got going on there. So let's just not have you check in on it.
But more judges are going to do this because some of them are getting really pissed off. There was a judge in San Francisco who pointed out that every person who's been arrested outside of a courtroom, every single one that have prevailed on their habeas corpus, every single one. And the judge pointed that out. You have not won a single one of these cases. Why do you keep making the same arguments? You lose all the time. All you're doing is harassing people who are trying to comply with the terms of their stuff. And this judge is getting ready to sanction. And so, you know, if they can't haul the guy in, apparently the military are now, paramilitary are now immune to court orders because they don't want to interfere with all the great stuff they're doing. This is going to happen. But I think more judges are going to be doing this, and the circuit courts are going to have to decide, you know, whether or not they want rule of law or not. Because is the point that there is, news a couple of weeks ago that Trump was thinking of sending troops to San Francisco, and then his Silicon Valley supporters said, no, don't do that. And so he didn't do it. I mean, it's the fact of the matter is, like everywhere else, crime has dropped in San Francisco. Homelessness is still a real problem, but the smash and grab, except for some problems in Union Square, they've actually gotten a handle on it. But it's happening everywhere else now. It happened in Contra Costa County recently, and it's happening in red states. So, it's happening in rural areas. So trying to say that, well, we're going to send it to the cities, send troops to the cities. And then there is at least one person who's making the claim that in Washington, D.C., where they did the first surge of people, they stopped. They were doing a comparative statistics. The Washington D.C. police were putting out comparative statistics to talk about the before and after of the surge in terms of reduction of crime. And at first there was a big reduction, and then the reduction was slowing down. It reached kind of a calculus of a point of diminishing returns. And then all of a sudden in September, they stopped. The last report is like a month after the surge, because it was going to get to the point where there was no difference from before. They aren't stopping crime. The only thing that was significantly reduced as of September was carjackings. And, it is, maybe you're less likely to do it if there are soldiers all over the streets, but it's certainly not stopping. The sexual crimes actually had increased. It wasn't, I don't blame it on that. It's just, on the surge. But that happens indoors. So how is the National Guard going to affect that? I mean, and obviously domestic violence is the same thing. But now thefts are back up because they see where the soldiers are and they just go to another neighborhood.
And Eric, you know, I'm going to stop you right there and correct you on one thing. You seem to think we're a nation that lives under the rule of law. That ended. We live under the rule of Trump. Whatever he says goes, doesn't matter what the judges say. It's what Trump wants, Trump gets.
Well, the point is that there is now going to be discussion. Has this made any kind of a difference in Washington, D.C.? Has it made a difference in reducing crime on the south side of Chicago?
Right.
Because one of the things they might run into in the long run is crime has been going down for decades now. It began in 1990. And immigration, it correlates to it. Now, there's a bunch of other reasons that crime could be going down. Cell phones, improved reporting systems, and other means. Also, the decline of crack cocaine. And actually, some people have even suggested the fact that we discovered the problem with lead, right? That new generations of crime are being reduced. But the pivot point of 1990 was a critical mass of immigration. And it seems very clear that there's a tight correlation between the rise of immigrant communities displacing criminal activity in inner cities. And they're going to run into this because in the long run, if they're destroying the immigrant communities, is that going to lower the crime in Chicago or increase it when it's been, like every other major city, decreasing for three decades now, over three decades?
Yeah, I think I'd like to see more data on that, obviously. That's a really interesting development. But I think that's where we're at, right? Is that we're actually going to have to start looking at real data right at the same time that there's a lack of commitment to continuing to collect data at the federal level. So we're going to be relying on non-governmental organizations of some kind or another. And thankfully, there are organizations like the Brennan Center, ACLU, but also, you know, even Heritage and Cato. And there's all sorts of organizations out there that aren't running into these funding problems. But I think that, you know, I've attended a few Association of Political Scientists seminars that they've done on crime in the past. And there is a developing consensus about what we really need to do to strengthen families, strengthen communities, and the impact that that has on lowering crime rates. The more robust a social safety net you have in place, the less likely it is that people are going to commit crime, among other things. Now, we know that the crime has always been and always will be a thing, but to mitigate it as much as possible with actual valid proven ways, instead of parking a Hummer on the corner with a few guys with machine guns, that's not necessarily the American way.
And is it going to be effective? I mean, there's a lot of questions being raised about statistics in general and effectiveness of a bunch of things. For instance, the traffic across the border has always been measured by how many people they catch, right? Because they figure it represents one in however many people. But what they haven't really taken note of is that I think it was like 9,000 people tried to cross in July or something like that, and that was lower than the previous. But the point is that in previous years, people were crossing the border and then turning themselves in because so that they can assert asylum claims. Well, that's not happening anymore. So people crossing the border aren't turning themselves in. So that means, you know, we don't know how many people are there. I actually have spoken to an individual that has actually been out, left the country twice this year and got back in and said it's easy to get it. It's still very easy to get into the country. It's not hard. The people who get caught are the people who don't know the terrain, who don't know where to go. So there needs to be a discussion. Are these policies effective? Is crime lower now in Chicago with the president? I mean, it hasn't been enough time in Chicago, but it certainly, I don't know if it's lower in Los Angeles. But is the National Guard presence in Washington, D.C. actually lowering crime? And that needs to be a discussion because again, you go to the police site and they're not even doing those stats anymore.
Right.
That's sus to me. If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
You can listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
And by the way, the other thing I need to mention, the judge you said who's holding up all the habeas corpus laws, she's going to get fired. She's gone.
Oh, no, that's not an immigration judge. They go to the district court for that. They can't be. That's the difference. They can't be fired. The ones that did it, you don't do habeas in immigration. Well,
these are elected. These are.
Or appointed.
Got it.
That's. And he can't do anything about that legally anyways. We'll see what happens. But again, we're talking about the purge of, there's going, starting to be kind of a purge of the military. He's fired a few people. He's also made it impossible so that, I'm forgetting the admiral's name who left because he doesn't want to be part of blowing up boats that, we're not certain of what's happening. And so basically the constitutionalists may be leaving the military. Department of Justice, two of their attorneys were suspended today, assistant U.S. attorneys Carlos Valdivia and Samuel White, were told because Taylor Toronto, who was involved in January 6th, is being tried for a separate crime, convicted of a second crime of threatening political figures. And they made the mistake of using the term riot to describe January 6th. They've been suspended for that in their paperwork.
And can I want to say one more thing here, too? And this is, I talked to a lot of different people and they say the same thing. If these alleged boats are carrying drugs, why doesn't the Coast Guard stop them, search the boat and find the drugs and then arrest the people? Why are we just going in first with the missile and blowing them out of the water? Would you want to take your family fishing in the Caribbean right now?
I mean, well, not during the hurricane, of course, but
I understand. But just hurricane passes 2 weeks from now, you're going to take your family fishing,
right?
Knowing there may be a satellite there.
It is a dangerous policy, and sooner or later, it could very well.
They're going to blow somebody up a family.
Yeah,
we don't know who they're blowing up. They're not telling us what's in here.
No, they're not sharing.
So I'll say two things real quick here. Firstly, there are, due process advocacy organizations that were very critical of the Obama era use of drones to murder people around the world who we put on a list. And so it's really a continuation of those policies where there's an impunity that's being declared. That's saying the executive branch already looks backwards at the last three administrations and says, we don't really have to follow the rule of law. Once we have a national emergency, we've declared a national emergency, and that therefore we're going to do
what's this national emergency then?
Sorry?
What's the national emergency? There's drugs coming into America?
What they're claiming is that the president of Venezuela is the head of a cartel of some kind that is it's just the generals. One of the generals who was arrested said so in federal court once in the U.S. And so because this one person testified under oath that all of the generals that support Maduro regime, because they are participating in this cartel, that it's a transnational drug organization. And they're claiming that every boat that they sink is going to save 50,000 American lives who would have overdosed on fentanyl. Considering that there's near 0% of the fentanyl coming to the United States comes through boats through the Caribbean. Yeah, it's almost impossible. No. And Matthew,
talked about it on the show before, 90% of it comes through the checkpoints in cars. More than half of the people carrying it are actually American citizens, many of them white, because those cars don't get searched as much. And that's where it's coming through. And what they need to be able to stop that isn't more troops or a wall or any of that. They need more equipment and more training, possibly more dogs and other things to be able to do that.
We lost Eric.
Lost Eric.
I'm back.
Yeah, okay, so hopefully we get him back. Oh, there he is. We lost you for a second.
Lost your background, Eric.
What I was going to say real quickly, though, Matthew, you'd mentioned, why doesn't the Coast Guard actually just continue along what they typically do, which is boarding ships, searching ships, arresting people. Well, it turns out, even during the Cuban Missile Crisis, that's what they did. They were boarding Russian ships and they were pulling up next to the Russian ships and saying, hey, we're not going to go to war here. Like there was an understanding that escalation of this nature is sort of, it's anathema to values that we have and that we have in place for due process. So yeah, this is like a runaway train, so to speak, where there's just, you know, there's no, you know, no allegiance to our standards of conduct. And that probably is going to have a morale impact on the soldiers involved.
Okay.
We should go ahead, Matt, and then we need to.
I was going to say, we need to probably pivot over to next week's elections. Yeah.
Well, and we've talked about we have a number of states have elections next week, including California, Prop 50, which looks like it's going to pass.
One item on the ballot.
Right, on the ballot. And yes, if you got your ballots, however you're voting, you need to get that in by Tuesday. But the biggest watch, I mean, there's a bunch of elections that are happening that are really being watched. But the biggest one is for the New York City mayor, the largest city in the country. I'm not sure. Is Los Angeles larger now? It's either the first or second largest. And it's, of course, the front runner, to everybody's shock, is a Democratic socialist named Mamdani, who has been ahead in the polls. And I would maintain that it's not his democratic socialism that has him winning, although that's a factor for his youth support. But of course, Mayor Adams, who's corrupt as anything, has dropped out. And that did benefit Cuomo a certain amount. There's been enormous pressure on Republican Sliwa, famous for his guardian angels, to drop out. He's not doing it. He's kind of a never-Trumper, actually. Independent, and they're putting pressure on him. But a Democratic socialist is going to get elected. And it was him, not other Democrats or liberals or anything, who said, we've elected Democratic socialist mayor before. And the world didn't end. David Dinkins was a member of DSA. LaGuardia was a socialist. And they got an airport named after him. So it's happened before, and it'll happen again. And he's saying that, you know, it's fine, but the not fine. He doesn't like it, but it's not cataclysmic as they're making it out to be. Meanwhile, the candidate that is being pushed back by Republicans and some older Democrats is Cuomo, who has been accused of sexually harassing 13 women, and his horrible policy possibly got a lot of people killed. I've always thought maybe he got a little bit of a bad rap on that, but he certainly didn't do the right thing to save those lives. So and this is during the pandemic. So Cuomo has inched up a little bit in the polling, but I think it's too late. It's not a ranked choice voting in the general election. So whoever gets the plurality wins, and Mamdani in the polls is consistently ahead in four of the five boroughs, and Cuomo has pulled ahead of Sliwa in Staten Island, which is the Republican, the one conservative borough. It looks like he's going to win, but the debates, the Democrats, especially the ones who are freaking out about this, need to look at it and see, instead of panicking, they need to look and say, why is this guy winning? Why is he there? He is the first figure since Bernie Sanders to interest young people, bringing them to the polls. And I don't think it's even necessarily his left-wing policies. I think the main thing is he's in touch. He can, you know, he knows, or at least he comes across as knowing that what affordability. Harris didn't talk about affordability, right? You know, the economy is great. And he's there saying, well, no, it hurts for you, whatever his policies are and what he can and can't put in, actually implement. He's going to win this because the Democrats ran horrible candidates against him and just machine people. Now Trump is backing the one. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we've got about 2 minutes to wrap up for prediction.
Go for it.
The one thing I want to say about Mamdani is he'll talk to anyone and everyone. I saw him on Fox News, and he was good. Don't know the guy's politics. He also mentioned the point Bill Ackerman, the billionaire hedge fund investor, has spent more money against Mamdani than what he would be taxed by Mamdani. Pouring in millions of dollars to defeat him. He says, your taxes wouldn't even go up by that much if my things go through.
No, Mamdani actually thanked him, said, you're helping our economy locally. So anyway, go ahead. Dave, you want to close it out?
Yeah, I mean, I would just add, I think we have talked about this a little bit in the past, but his average lead now is over 17 points. And he won the primary by, you know, upwards of, you know, double digits, 13-ish points, if I remember correctly. So he's had this lead. And what is attributable to throughout is that he did a, you know, hit the streets, door to door, grassroots, asking people, what are your top priorities? And they were nearly all related to different aspects, facets of affordability and cost of living and the economy. And throughout the debates, he just really was just more temperate, more articulate, more in touch. And the attacks against him have been all, you know, basically, I'll just say misguided and really ineffective. I'll just leave it there because we have limited time. Nothing really changed that dynamic throughout. It was just a lack of vision about what people are really clamoring for. He went from 50,000 door-to-door volunteers, I just heard last night. He's got 90,000 volunteers going door-to-door.
I mean, so that's going to get people out. I mean, and during the debate, it was like, you know, Cuomo, I don't know what he's thinking, was talking about how the state was ripping off the city. And then Mondani, one-liner, turns and says, well, who was in charge of the state? You know, and he said, well, no, it's Holcher. He said, no, it happened before you. And he pointed out the programs that had been cut at when Cuomo was governor. I mean, he's that was instantaneously, he thought, you know, responded that way. It wasn't prepared. He just, you know, I mean, we don't have, you know, it's just look at it for that reason. I think the Democrats really need to, finally, some of the mainstream Democrats came out at the last minute and endorsed him, Hochul and Jeffries. Schumer hasn't, and Pelosi has been dead silent.
And
so,
I'll just say one thing. This New York mayor race comes down to one thing, the rich getting taxed, and they do not like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I could cure the deficit in this country in 1 hour. It'd be done. The rich and the corporations would freak out, but I'd get it done.
Bring taxes back to,
I would even say, the 70s. We have a progressive tax where if you make X, you pay little, but as you go up, you pay more. The rich people making these, Bill Ackermans are making 10, 20 million a year, do not want to pay. The average person making that size money pays 8% federal income tax. It's a hell of a lot more than I pay.
I think we have to break off. There's plenty more we can talk. We'll be talking about the aftermath of the election next week, but it's time for predictions. What have you got?
I'm going to start first. Mandami is going to win and win big. The sun's going to come up the next day in New York City. Now, if he wants to try to tax the rich, good luck. I hope he gets it done. We'll see if he can be effective on taxing the rich.
Okay, Dave?
While it seems like it's a really, you know, sideshow issue, that President Trump's ballroom, to be named Trump ballroom, supposedly, it seems like it's, you know, just a distraction, but in fact, it really does trouble people at some core level that I think really has yet to play out. The president fired all members of the Commission on Fine Arts, which is the independent federal agency that reviews monuments, government buildings, and construction projects. He said they got an email that terminated them immediately, and instead he appointed his personal lawyer as the head of the National Campaign Planning Commission and said that this commission, his lawyer said the commission doesn't need to review it. It's fine. No review. Just do it, President. Of course. Right. And the rest of the commission stacked with his cabinet members and allies. But just as a reminder, he told the country, we're not going to touch the East Wing. But when the building team got back to him and said, oh, in fact, you know, it would be a lot easier if we did it, and it would be a lot faster if we just tore the whole thing down. Supposedly, he's dropped one F-bomb and said, OK, just do it at night. Do it as quickly as you can. Took 3 days. But the old adage for real estate developers, once it's demolished, you can't put it back together. So I would say that this is something that's really going to linger painfully. And it's because it's really unpopular. 60% of the country against it, only 25 in favor. And push comes to shove, I think destroying a huge monument like that, the way he did it, is really, that's this people are going to realize that's this president's commitment to the rule of law, which is near nil.
All right, I'm going to be real quick. There is a Democratic primary going on in Maine to see who will challenge Susan Collins for the Senate position in Maine next year. And so the Democrats are given a possible chance to win. Unfortunately, the Bernie Sanders and youth-backed Graham Platner whom they thought might be another Mondami, is not. He has a tattoo that apparently has a swastika on it, and he says that was from his, you know, past. But also he's had some really problematic social media statements. He has fallen behind Maine Governor Janet Mills, and I'm predicting that she's going to win it. I mean, it's considered a loss for Democrats because they are saying that, well, this guy had a chance at defeating Collins. I think Mills has a chance too. She's won statewide elections, but it's just not going to be quite the dynamics that some of the Democrats were hoping for, particularly the progressives. We'll find out if any of this comes true next time. Until then, stay informed and stay engaged.
And vote.